I think from a city planning, just forgetting about the actual complexity of converting the building, making these neighborhoods more mixed use and having more residential in the middle of Midtown instead of it being 100% office is a good thing, because that residential activity is what really makes the city hum.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Guy Geyer, Senior Partner at FX Collaborative. I'm really excited to jump into this conversation, Guy. How are you today?
I'm great. It's great to be with you, Eric. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. And so, you know, if you've ever listened to this show or any of the audience has, we always start with good news and gratitude. So I'm going to ask you if there's any personal or professional good news you'd like to share with me and the audience.
Well, on a personal front, I'll say that I'm very happy these days because I have a 10-month-old and a 4-month-old, two granddaughters who I am thoroughly enjoying. This is like a new phase of life, and it's fantastic. So I'm so blessed to have both of them in my life, and my wife and I are just having a thrill to hang out with them whenever we can. On a professional level, we just announced on Monday that we were joining forces with a firm in Canada named LeMay, L-E-M-A-Y. They're a large architectural firm in Canada with offices across the country and some overseas offices, and they had a small footprint here in New York that they wanted to expand. And they approached us a couple years ago, and we've been talking and coming to the conclusion that we would make a great team together. So we have launched our future together as of Monday, and it's very exciting. And they do things we don't, and we do things they don't, but we have some common kind of cultural connections. We're both highly committed to sustainability and high-performance buildings and really helping to shape the future of our cities. And so we couldn't be more happy to be a part of LeMay and vice versa. They great people that we're looking forward to now working together on projects.
That's awesome news. Congrats. That's really
cool.
I will share like a personal story that, you know, been going to like more conferences and doing some more research on M&A, and it's amazing how much they talk about the culture being the most important part. Like, it's almost never about the dollars. They're like, you could have a good deal or a bad deal, but what's going to make it a good or bad deal is all on the culture, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Every merger, acquisition, whatever that it is that I've seen, it usually fails because of the culture, and that is the most important thing. And so yeah, we are very aligned and of a single mind in terms of what we want to try to accomplish as architects and the impact that architecture and interior design and planning and everything else that the firms do can have on people's lives. So, yeah, it's great.
It's amazing. And that's what I wanted to draw out. I was like, I love that when you were talking about it, you were just focused on how culturally aligned the two firms were. It's really exciting. I'm going to read more about that. I did not know about that. I guess that was just a couple of days
ago. It's hot off the press. The press release went out on Monday. I think Architects newspaper picked it up first, but it's coming out in other media outlets as well.
I'm sure it's big. I mean, you're very well-known firm, so I'm sure it'll be big news. I'm sure a lot of people will be paying attention to it if they aren't already.
Yeah.
My good news, especially on show day, is always to the guest. I can't imagine how busy you are, and so I just love that they gave me an opportunity here to sit down and talk to you. I learned so much during these episodes about the guest, but also about me and, like, talking about this, right? Like, how important culture is, and, you know, I know that that will be one of my takeaways from today's episode. It's just, like, are we focused enough on culture? And we do a lot around culture here, and but I just feel like you can almost never do enough. No matter how much you're doing, you can always do more. But culturally. I think it's always good. My professional gratitude is always to my team. So even before we started filming here, I'd mentioned how integral Stephanie's been to helping us with the podcast. And so I just always have gratitude for my team. And I'll thank Steph again here now. So thank you, Steph. All right, great. Well, some really exciting news, and that's very current. But take us back a bit. Tell us about yourself, right? Where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How'd you decide you wanted to be an architect? Did you decide? Sometimes decisions are made for us.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in central New Jersey in a little town called Colonia. Suburban, single family homes, played with all the kids on the block and all that. But my father was in the retail furniture business and also an interior designer. So he was always exposing us to design. And I can remember even as a little kid going to New Hope, Pennsylvania and rummaging through the antique stores and all that kind of thing in New Hope. And I didn't realize it so much, I guess, at the time that it was making that big an impression on me. But I also was somewhat artistic, painting and drawing. But at the time, and this was in the late 60s, the space race was going on, getting to the moon before the Russians and all that good stuff. And I was good at math too, in addition to the art. So I had decided that I wanted to go to engineering school to become a rocket scientist, believe it or not. So in my junior year of high school, I took a mechanical drawing class. And the first semester was all engineering drawings. So we were drawing machine parts and all sorts of crap like that. And the second semester was architectural drawing, floor plans, elevations, things like that. And when I started doing that, I suddenly realized, wow, this is a lot more fun, a lot more interesting than drawing nuts and bolts and machine parts. So I kind of made at that point a decision that I would go to architecture school. And even though my college counselor at the time did not think I was going to get into architecture school, he was trying to convince me to apply to engineering schools that had architecture as well at the universities and get in under engineering and then transfer to architecture. And after talking to my parents about that, I said, I really don't want to waste a year going to engineering school. I want to just go into architecture. So I applied to a bunch of architecture schools. And was fortunate to get into a few and ultimately decided to go to the University of Virginia, which was fortuitous on many levels, but UVA had a great architecture school, still does. I'm still very involved with the school. Thomas Jefferson was our only president who was an architect, and he designed the grounds at UVA, and it was just an inspiration to me to be there. So I went to architecture school. Graduate, stayed there for both undergraduate and graduate school, and then came out and got a job with a firm that I had done a couple summer internships with and worked there for a long time and then decided it was time to make a change. Worked for a few other firms in the interim and then found my way to FX Collaborative it's 20 years ago now that I joined the firm. And it's been great. My whole career, the opportunities that I had and the changes I made through that career all were for a purpose, and they were all kind of to get me to where we are now. And so I'm very blessed to have had the career that I did and I've had. You know, looking forward to going on for a few more years before I retire.
Well, so a few things I pulled out of that. I love U.S. history. I love like American history. And so I didn't realize he was our only architect president. I know there's four of the founding fathers were land surveyors. Land surveyors will never let you forget that. That one I knew, but didn't know about Jefferson being an architect. That's great. My other parallel, and I'm apologetic that I didn't touch on this more, but you mentioned you have two granddaughters. I think that is amazing. My wife is pregnant and we have one daughter.
Congratulations. That's great.
You know my dad?
Yes, sir.
He's also very excited whenever he can. And, he spends a lot of time with my daughter, his granddaughter. But he had also gone on to graduate school for, I think it was aerospace engineering or aerospace engineering.
Yeah.
He didn't finish. He had to start working. But another parallel there, pretty interesting. So, but I wanted to take a minute to just congratulate you on your granddaughters. And
Thank you.
Right now, I only know what it's like to have kids. It's fun and scary, but I'm sure one day I'll know what it's like to have grandkids, hopefully.
Well, the grandkids part is fun. The scary part's not so much. I mean, we worry about them, and you worry about them because that's what you're supposed to do, but you don't have to deal with all the dirty details, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah. All right, cool. So, you know, loved hearing a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into architecture. One of the things you mentioned when you were talking about the partnership with LeMay was how you're both devoted to, like, kind of inspiring the communities like you work in, right, through your architecture. And so where did that passion come from? Was there a moment in your career that kind of came about? Did you just know that from the beginning? Or did someone, maybe there was someone in your life that, like, kind of changed your perspective on that? Like, hey, what we're doing is important.
Yeah. I mean, I think I went into architecture because, well, I was very naive when I went into architecture.
We all are. All of us, not knowing what we're doing.
And when I showed up first year at UVA and started with the introductory classes, I was like, oh my God, I never thought of that before. And so it was somewhat of a rude awakening to understand kind of the depth and complexity of what architecture is all about. But I think both at UVA and the professors I had there, as well as other people that I ended up meeting along the way, I realized that architecture wasn't just about making buildings. It was about influencing society in a positive way, changing society in a positive way. And it wasn't also about whether someone liked the aesthetics of a building or not. I mean, there's going to always be a debate about aesthetics, and that's good. But at the end of the day, I think what really makes architecture special is that you're improving the quality of life for people, for a community, for a city, leaving at the end of the world in a better place than it was when you started. And I think that's something that I think about a lot. And I look back on the projects I've done, and I think they have achieved those for those objectives in most cases. The sad ones are the ones that are, you know, no longer around, that we built and they've been demolished or modified to such a degree that my work is not there anymore. So that's sad. But that's also part of the kind of natural process of things. I think these days, though, with the focus on sustainability and the impact that demolition has on the environment in terms of waste and landfills and all that, there's been a kind of renewed interest in trying to repurpose buildings, find new uses that you don't have to demolish them. You can upgrade them and they can have another entire life in the future. And so we've done a lot of that kind of work. I've done a lot of that kind of work here. And that's really very fulfilling as well.
When you're talking about sustainability, and especially like major cities, right? Obviously here in New York. But, you know, we hear a lot about the commercial to residential renovations. Have you seen that? And I've talked to a few people about that. I know one of the challenges just around getting it underwritten, right? It's an expensive process. But are you hearing more around the possibility? City of Yes is a big thing right now.
We're involved with a number of projects that are converting office buildings to residential here in the city. And we've looked at a few in other places too. I think that it depends on the building. There are buildings that are smaller floor plates, kind of mid-block, post-war, between-the-war buildings that have smaller floor plates. They're easier to convert because you can get light and air for the apartments. The bigger mid-century office buildings in Midtown, for instance, where they have such large floor plates at the bottom, and it's a lot more difficult, if not impossible, to get those to work. Now, we've done some interesting things with common spaces and shared amenities and all that to kind of fill up the dark spaces on the inside of those big floor plates. Or we've looked at mixed use where the bottom of the building might be more of a commercial use, office use, institutional use, whatever. And then the taller tower portion of the building becomes the residential. So, and it's a much more complex series of issues that we have to look at. But it has gained a lot of interest and traction, and we are starting to see a lot of those conversions happening. And it's great. I think from a city planning, just forgetting about the actual complexity of converting the building, making these neighborhoods more mixed use and having more residential in the middle of Midtown instead of it being 100% office is a good thing, because that residential activity is what really makes the city hum. So,
city.
Yeah. So I think it's a good thing. It's going to take some time. It's not an easy thing to do. You mentioned underwriting. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. But City of Yes is definitely a help, and we're starting to see some action in that regard. So it's good.
It's great, and especially for like what we do. Always, when the architects are busy, that means hopefully we'll be busy in about a year. So I hope this all comes to fruition. I went to a session on the City of Yes, and by all accounts, the city is trying. And obviously, there's always administrative challenges and red tape and all that.
Well, I think the city is doing as much as it can and working to do more. I think the problems are more macro problems that don't have to do with the city. There are bigger economic issues at play. Cost of construction is going up. Access to labor is becoming a problem. Those interest rates being high, those are things that the city can't solve. So until we get some help on a macroeconomic level, we're going to continue to have to find creative solutions to get these projects to happen.
That was primarily what I'm hearing. I mean, mostly, like I said, it's around the underwriting and financing, right? Like, because the owners want to do it because they also don't want vacancies, you know, and they see that this is the trend and we need housing. It's good for the city. Yeah. It's for the state. It's good for all of us. So I believe a lot of good people working together towards a good goal, they'll figure it out. We always do. New York is extremely resilient.
We always do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
You're talking about seeing some projects that you've worked on and torn down. But I'm curious, like, is there one that sticks out to you in particular, like you were emotionally drawn to for whatever reason, right? I don't know. You know, you worked on a number of different types of facilities. Is there a project that sticks out?
I don't have a favorite child, you know. They're all different and that you love them all for different reasons. There are probably two projects that I feel are my favorites or that I'm most proud of. One is the Javits Convention Center, which we were involved with to renovate the existing building and bring it back, and then to also do kind of conceptual performance requirements, et cetera, for the northern expansion of the Javits that's now been built and completed for a number of years. When we first got involved with the Javits, they were looking to expand the Javits, but basically not in the northerly direction. They were looking to expand it in significant ways. Then the 2008-09 recession came along and it kind of squashed those plans, but they rethought what they wanted to do. And it became a kind of renovation in place, if you will, but it was a complete repositioning of the building. We took the curtain wall, the glass off of the space frame, replaced all the glass with high-performance glass that was also bird-friendly. Javits was the biggest bird killer in the country. They would send people out every morning and pick up the dead birds. It was very sad. So anyway, but we've been a real pioneer in the development of bird-safe glass. We helped write the local regulations that require owners to incorporate bird safing in their new buildings. But Javits was a real groundbreaker in that regard.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
Could you tell us how that works? I didn't know about that. What is a bird
safe? Well, there are a lot of different ways to do it, but birds, you know, when they see a glass building, they don't perceive the solidity of it. They see the reflection of it, and so they think that it's clear and they
can fly it through.
Fly through it. So there are a number of applications, but the most common are either stripes or dots. And in Javits' case, we use dots. These are small.
Oh, cool.
They're probably quarter inch round dots that you put on the, that are put on the glass, either attached or sometimes ceramic frit is used to do it. The dot pattern is tightly spaced. It's about 3-4 inches on center. And so the birds see that and it helps them recognize that's a solid instead of a pass-through. So it has reduced the bird kill at Javits to almost nothing. And on top of that, we put a green roof on Javits, which is, I think, still the largest green roof east of the Mississippi. And we didn't necessarily expect this to happen, but because Javits is near the river and it's on migratory patterns, there are birds that nest on the roof now, and it's been incredible. It's like this little mini oasis for them. Now they have beehives on the roof and all sorts of cool stuff. So, and the new addition, the northern addition, has actually a kind of urban farm, and they grow vegetables and other things to use in their food preparation at Javits as well for events and all that. So the transition of this building from an energy hog, a not very inviting space and all that, to something that is a high performance building that is not killing birds and that people go in and can experience all this bright, exuberant space, I think is really cool. And then we fixed the roof, which was leaking like a sieve. So very practical issues, but very bigger kind of societal. And it's served as a catalyst for the West Side development. I mean, now we have Hudson Yards. We have Hudson Boulevard, which is from 34th Street going north. We have new buildings, the Spiral. We're working on a new residential and hotel building on 11th Avenue. There are others kind of working their way north from 34th Street that it's completely changed what people's perceptions of the West Side has been. So that to me is great. We saved a building. We made it work great, much better. And we also changed a neighborhood. And so that's wonderful. The other project, which is one that's currently under construction and nearing completion, is a project on 57th Street, West 57th Street, that we are doing for Alchemy, which is a developer here, and for the Calvary Baptist Church. Calvary Baptist Church occupied this site at 125 West 57th Street for almost a decade. I think they've been there in one shape. There were two previous churches to what we're doing now. And the last version was a church that was sort of embedded in a hotel. They had their own entrance, and it was kind of this Gothic limestone entrance, but basically it was kind of surrounded by the hotel. And they own the hotel and the church. And the idea was, when they built it, was that they were going to use the hotel to underwrite the activities of the church. And over years, it didn't really work. They originally hired us to do a feasibility study, determine how much work they'd need to put into the hotel and the church to fix it up. And when we told them how expensive that was going to be, they said, oh, well, maybe we need to go to plan B. So cut the story short, because if I told you all the details, it would take a long time. But anyway, we found a developer in Alchemy who was willing to partner with the church to build a new building for them. So an 80,000 square foot facility for the church, and then use the air rights that were available on the site to build an office building above it that they would rent out to tenants. And so that's now nearing the end of its construction. And aside from the architecture of it, and, you know, I was very involved with the design of the church facility. We had another team working on the actual building. But so aside from the design side of that, which has been very rewarding, and the spaces are great. There's a big sanctuary space. There's a fellowship hall, which is like a gymnasium, which is probably the best gymnasium I've ever done, and classrooms and offices and all that kind of thing to support the mission of the church. The thing that makes me the most proud about it was not that. It was putting together the partnership, or introducing the partnership of the church to Alchemy. We had done other work with Alchemy, and one of my partners, Dan Kaplan, and I approached Alchemy when it was clear that the church needed a partner to do this project successfully. And I had gotten to know the church folks so well, and just felt like we've got to find a way, to make this work for them. And so we introduced them to Alchemy, and ultimately they were able to strike a deal that now is giving them really an amazing facility for their purposes as a church and their congregation? And how come you'll have a great office building to lease on 57th Street? And that's the kind of thing that makes me feel good about projects, is that ability to kind of do something that's bigger than just the project by itself.
Yeah, I mean, those are both amazing projects. I will say the Javits, and I learned a lot from you about that project, but we were a much smaller company then. We're still a small company, but that was one of our biggest projects. Like when we were fortunate enough to win that and to work with them. And so I've always had a soft spot. And then now we go back for events and stuff, and they've done such a great job. I mean, space is beautiful. They really do a great job. To the 57th Street, I didn't realize you guys were the architect, but I was actually there this weekend with my family. We were just like walking around south of Central Park, and we went to Columbus Circle. And so it's right next to the Park Hyatt, right? Or like two or three. I walked right by it. I had no idea that was you guys. That's really, and now I'm glad to hear the history behind that. It's amazing. And while you were telling the story, you had mentioned how, you know, you kind of developed that partnership with them. And that's like a great feeling, right? When you could help a client just really see their vision and execute on it. And so I can see why that's probably a really important project for you and for the firm. Very cool. That's great. So here's this question around, big part of the show for us is about the next generation and what are we doing to help mentor them. So I'm going to ask you a personal question, which is, if you were able to go back, it's 20, 30 years in time, right? And you can give yourself some advice, what do you think it would be? As a young person in this industry, what is some advice you wish you had?
Probably, and you know, it's funny because we have summer interns here for the summer. They're here and they're all in architecture school at varying levels in their education. And we had a breakfast for them this morning to talk to them and find out what they were doing, but also talk to them about the profession and careers in architecture and all that. And so I told them one thing that I was not prepared for, and that I told them they should be, is the kind of roller coaster ride, if you will, that being an architect is. And it's, I'm not saying that is a good or a bad thing. It's just the facts. The economy goes up and down. It's going to continue to go up and down. There'll be high points. There'll be low points. We have to respond to those things. We hire people. We have to make adjustments when things get slower. And that they need to kind of know going in. And I'm not trying to discourage you. This is trying to encourage you and make you just aware, because out of any of those circumstances, you can find an opportunity and you can't get discouraged about it, because it's kind of just the life of an architect. I mean, you go back in history, the great architects of the Renaissance, and they had low points. They didn't have patrons that were paying them to do their work, and they had to go out and find new patrons and all that, and they struggled for periods of time, and then they became famous, and then they struggled again. This is just part of what the profession is all about, for better or worse. And I think nobody really told me that at the beginning. Not that it would have changed anything. Maybe it was better, I didn't know, and I just kind of put my head down, worked hard, and it worked out. But that's been one thing that I think has been a kind of something that's revealed itself over the years that I've had to accept and deal with.
I think that's great advice. It's actually just funny because I was having a conversation earlier today with like another CEO in the industry who's younger, smaller firm kind of thing. And we were talking about how like those ups and downs and you have to adjust to them. And that coming out of school, you almost feel like everything has to be perfect, right? And it has to be done one way and it has to be right. And they almost don't teach you appropriately how to deal with that kind of sudden change or a setback or the fact that sometimes circumstances happen to you, not because of you, and you need to be able to like be resilient enough to adjust to that. So I think it's great advice. Go with the flow and take the punches when you need to and maybe dish them out when you need to.
And also, I think a lot of it has to do with recognizing what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, because everybody comes out of architecture school. Maybe not everybody, but most come out of architecture school thinking that they're going to be the next great designer, going to be the next great Frank Lloyd Wright or whatever. And the reality is that this is a very complex profession, and there are people that do all sorts of things, and we're not all designers. I mean, we all unpack design, but we don't have to be sitting at our desk actually physically designing things to have an impact on design. We can be a great project manager. We can be a great technician, putting buildings together, making sure that the way they're built reinforces what the design vision was, all that sort of thing. And it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of profession. There's lots of different roles that people can play. And I think if you recognize what you're good at, what you're not so good at, and kind of focus on that and leverage that, then, you know, you can be very successful.
Foreign skill. Understand your strengths, understand your weaknesses, understand how they impact everybody else. You just mentioned, so your summer intern started. Tell us about that program. How do you structure it? How many interns? I mean, it's great to hear. I love that our industry does stuff like this.
I think we have 6 interns this year. Every year is a little different, just depends. And we assign them to different things. One of them is, they're all in architecture school, but one of them's working in our marketing team. She just finished her second year in school, so she's got a few more years to go. So she's working with our marketing team, doing great. We have another guy who's working on sustainability. That's what his focus is in school too. And so he's working on some sustainability projects. And the others are assigned to different project teams to support what those teams are doing. And, you know, we just try to expose them to as much as possible. We get them out on the construction sites as much as we can. And we take them to showrooms and we do sketch crawls. People on Friday afternoons will go out to neighborhoods and do some sketchbook stuff. And just expose them to as much as we can in the short time that we have them here. And, you know, we've in the past, we've had people that have been summer interns that we end up hiring when they get out of school, and they've been with us for a long time. And it's something we feel very strongly about, that it's a big part of giving back to the profession to make sure that we can bring the future architects into the office to help expose them to the profession. And most of the time, I think it reinforces what their decisions were about being an architect. Maybe occasionally they say, hey, you know what? This is not really what I thought it was going to be. Maybe it's time to make a change. But it's all good. It's all positive in terms of what those experiences are.
It's awesome. Before we jump into the lightning round, on a thought around about you, and because it sounds like you just talked about an intern who's really just starting their career. Obviously, you said, I know you've got some time left, but what do you hope your legacy is, right? What do you want to leave, you know, let's say the next couple of years to 10 years, and then you want to keep doing this? What do you want your legacy to be?
Wow, legacy. Well, aside from great projects that I can point to, right, I want to make sure that I leave a firm that is firmly rooted in our history as a firm, committed to the things that we've been committed to all along, sustainability, camaraderie, collaboration, technical excellence, design excellence. I want to make sure that those are all features of the firm and qualities of the firm that continue way past my being here. And I think if I can do that, and I think it's baked into the firm's culture to a large degree. I mean, we were founded 47 years ago, and Bruce Fowle retired, I don't know, now it's maybe 15 years or so ago. And Bruce really embedded a lot of the same cultural qualities that you see in the firm today were established when he was here and when they founded the firm. And a lot of things have changed in the world and the profession, but I think those basic kind of cultural commitments are still there. Caring about our fellow coworkers and kind of having a family atmosphere as much as possible. We all go through trauma and we all go through troubles. There's all things we have to deal with, some of them happy, some of them not. But doing our best to support each other is, I think, an important thing. So if that's what is left behind as a legacy, then I'll be very happy.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, everybody wants to be Frank Lloyd Wright. And I think it's interesting how over time, probably what you want your legacy to be changes. And I know for me, it's true, right? Like, when I first got into the industry, it was all about, like, can we work on the biggest projects and can we do that? And there's still a little bit of that.
And, you know, there are people here that I've worked very closely with that I see as current and future leaders of the firm. that when it does come time for me to move on, that I know that they're going to be successful and be able to continue to be leaders of the practice. And that's where I'm focusing my time now, is to make sure that whenever I do take the next step, that there will be people that I've put in place to be successful.
Well, perpetuate your values, right? It was exactly what you said you want your legacy to be. And that's like amazing to me. So, well, I will jump into our lightning round here. So these are rapid fire
questions. Okay,
here
come the tough ones.
I'm excited just to learn a little bit more about you. But first one is, do you have a favorite band?
Favorite band. Well, I have many favorite bands. It just depends on what the time frames are. Somebody asked me this the other day. They said, what was your favorite band growing up? I said, well, I kind of had two, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and the Eagles. That was the kind of high school years. That was kind of what I listened to. Then, of course, I'm a Jersey boy, so Springsteen is a big favorite and continues to be. U2 is probably right now, I would say, one of my favorites that are still out there and a little more current. So those are my favorite bands right now.
All amazing bands. And I miss the Eagles by like a couple of days at the Sphere. We went out to Vegas for a conference and they were playing out there. Did you go see them? I don't know.
I didn't see them at the Sphere. Okay, I've seen the Eagles in other venues and they're amazing. And they're going back on tour now. They're always on tour.
But we did go see U2 at the Sphere. They have like this hologram virtual concert. It was cool. The Sphere is a very cool structure. Awesome. So next question is, if you like to cook, the question is, the dish you cook best, do you like to cook?
I do like to cook. I like grilling. Grilling is kind of my thing. So last weekend was Father's Day weekend. So we had some of the family over for Father's Day and I did ribs on the grill and they were perhaps the best ones we ever had. I enjoy grilling and I enjoy Italian cooking as well. I experiment with different pastas and things like that. So
homemade pasta or?
No, I don't make my own. I wish that I had the time to do that. But there's a pasta dish that I learned from watching the Stanley Tucci Italian shows. And it's very simple, but it's basically anchovies, spaghetti, and butter. Can't go wrong with butter. And then Parmesan cheese, of course. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be fairly simple, but I love Italian food.
Awesome. My wife and I watched this movie, Nonas, on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, it's a great movie. Absolutely.
Very positive.
True story, like, you know.
Yeah, true story. We felt great.
Yeah, and it was filmed in Elizabeth, New Jersey at a restaurant. They showed it towards the end of the movie that they showed the floor and said Spiritos.
Yeah.
And Spiritos, it was a restaurant now out of business. They closed because of COVID, which is very unfortunate. But Spiritos was a fixture in Elizabeth. My parents grew up in Elizabeth. We spent a lot of time there visiting grandparents and all that as I was growing up. And we'd go to Spiritos all the time. And it was this classic Italian place. And so the movie was filmed there, even though the restaurant is closed, because the real Nonas is on Staten Island, so, which I would love to go to, but I got on their website and it's like booked into forever. You can't get a table. So, yeah.
Once they make a movie, it's very hard. Like, I can't remember the example. It was like a restaurant I just happened to go to. And then all of a sudden it was like ranked on something or whatever. And I told my family, I was like, oh, the food's good. We should go there. And then like after it got ranked, we could never get there again. But I like walked in. I just like walked in casually. I was able to eat there because no one knew about it yet. And last one, and then I'll let you go. But do you have like a favorite board game or activity you like to do with the family or growing up with your friends?
Well, I'm a golfer.
Oh, another thing you and my dad share. Have you ever been golfing with my dad?
I have not.
Well, he loves to golf.
I am a golfer. I love playing. I love pushing myself. I'm very critical of myself. But occasionally we get rewarded on Father's Day. Not to brag too much, but on Father's Day, my club had a parent-child tournament. So my son and I played together and we won. I was blown away. I mean, he's a good golfer. He's really into it and we play well. And we're very competitive with each other when we're just out playing a friendly round. But we got into this tournament on Sunday and ended up winning, which was very exciting. So that's probably my biggest pastime, although I love travel. We were in France a month and a half ago. We're going to Italy in the fall. We love to travel and see new things and try new foods and all that kind of stuff. So that's a big part of my life. And I think travel and experiencing other cultures and countries and architecture, it all comes back and kind of informs what we do here. So
that's awesome. Well, congrats on the victory. That's got a, that thank must you. Have been a really, really fun Father's Day.
Yeah.
And thank you for your time here on the show. Learned a lot. Loved hearing about your perspective on architecture. Excited to see what you guys do with the city next, because architects lead the way in a lot of ways. But that's all the time we have for today. Do you have any parting words or anything?
No, I'll just say thank you very much. I appreciate you inviting me to be on the podcast, and I've enjoyed it myself. And yeah, look forward to seeing you and your father sometime soon.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we'll probably see you AIA golf outing, right? I can only imagine.
I will be there. Yep. I'm definitely going to be there. So we'll see you then, if not before.
Awesome. Thanks everyone for listening. Keep an eye out for our next episode and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Eric. Take care.
Thanks, guy.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.